Scriptural Relation of Religion and the State, Chapter 10. How about Sunday laws? One of the most prominent questions of this whole controversy, one that from the first union of church and state has ever been a prominent one, is that which forms the subject of this chapter. To follow its history in the introduction and enforcement of Sabbath or Sunday laws with any degree of minuteness would require a volume. Only the principles will be aimed at here, though in order to come at the principles, it may be necessary to notice some events with which the inception of such laws are associated and through which they found their way into human statutes. The character of the whole question at issue is involved in the subsidiary one now before us. If it be right for the state to enforce religious dogmas and practices, if the civil power by right can control men's consciences, regulate their practices, and prescribe their duties in those things that relate only to God, then Sunday laws are proper, and no one should say aught against them. If the state is authorized to sit in the temple of God as God, ordaining what men shall do and what they shall refrain from doing, in order that God's will may be done by them, then this book is altogether superfluous, and all the protests that have ever been uttered against the exercise of arbitrary power over the conscience, and in behalf of religious liberty and equality, have been ill-conceived, untimely struggles against a tyranny that was ordained by heaven in spiritual things, to be exercised by those who happen to be in power. Then all the blood shed by martyrs and saints is but the fruit of rebellion and stubborn 65-ness, testifying to the obduracy of the men who chose to die rather than violate their sense of right, their understanding of the divine will. Then the real heroes of those dreadful days were those who gloated in death and destruction in the name of religion. Thank God there is a mighty if standing at the head of this horrible proposition. Let a view of the conclusion to which the claim of validity for such laws would lead arouse every observer to a sense of their real character. We repeat that the whole question of whether one man is authorized to domineer over the conscience of another is wrapped up in this of the real character of those laws by which it is attempted to compel men to refrain from labor upon and hold in sacred veneration a certain day, whether they have any heart in it or not. Every consideration of liberty, of equality, and of individual accountability unites in a vigorous protest against such laws. The holy principles of the religion of Jesus Christ, the universal testimony of the Bible and of history, combine to stamp this work as an unwarrantable infringement of the sacred rights of conscience vouchsafed to men by their Creator. It is not necessary to reiterate the sentiment that the religion of the Bible, with its hallowed institutions, is the best thing in this world. But it is equally true that the greatest curse this world can produce is that religion, or a pretense of it, in the hands of vindictive or bigoted men who are armed with the civil power. The Sabbath is purely a religious institution, and is suggested only by the facts related in the Bible. There is absolutely nothing in nature to give us the idea of the weekly period. The fact that God rested upon the seventh day, blessed and sanctified it, and commanded us to keep it, furnishes the primary basis of all Sabbath obligation. In truth, it is all the obligation there is, if we rule out man-made laws. By this expression, it is not intimated that the authority for the Sabbath is defective or weak, for if God has spoken, if His own lips have given us the word, nothing can be added to that authority. 2,000 years after its institution, the Sabbath law found a place in the Decalogue, where it was spoken and written by Jehovah Himself. The institution was recognized and observed by the Savior, who declared Himself to be Lord of the Sabbath day. This declaration doubtless rested on the fact that He was the active Creator of all things, and of this the Bible gives abundant testimony. The worlds were created of the Father through the Son. See Hebrews 1, verse 2, John 1, verse 3, Colossians 1, verse 16-17. Hence, He it was who rested upon and blessed the Sabbath and sanctified it, and consequently is its Lord. The Sabbath is Christ's rest day, established and owned by the Son of God. In its establishment, man had no share. It was given him, filled with spiritual blessings, to keep and honor as a reminder of his God and Savior. As an outward sign, it is the great connecting link between God and his people, between heaven and earth. There is neither human image nor superscription upon it. It is heavenly, spiritual, divine. But in the sight of men, the Sabbath has lost much of its brightness and power, because it has been eclipsed by another, a human substitution, bearing the stamp of the civil power. This innovation appeared for the first time in the early part of the 4th century, clothed in the armor of an imperial edict. Constantine has gained the high distinction of being called the first Christian emperor. Certainly, he was the first who, in his imperial capacity, espoused the cause of the Christian Church, though his private character as a Christian is subject to much criticism. His dominion was rent by factions. Even the Christians were divided among themselves, and between paganism and Christianity there seemed to yawn an impassable gulf. And yet this man undertook the seemingly hopeless task of strengthening his realm by uniting those conflicting elements. He summoned a grand council for the purpose of reconciling the bishops in their disputes. He also projected a great scheme of compromise for the purpose of uniting the pagan and Christian systems. How well he succeeded need not be discussed here. It is certain he succeeded better with the latter project than with the former. It was easier to reconcile pagans to Christians than it was to reconcile contending Christians to one another. As a result of his efforts, there appeared upon earth that showy fabric known as the papacy, into every figure of which were woven the glossy threads of ancient heathenism. In this period, AD 321, was heralded to the world the first Sunday law bearing the impress not of the divine, but of the human, being signed and sealed by Constantine. This law, though it was the first civil enactment in favor of Sabbath rest, was not after the divine law, for it directed the refraining from labor upon the first day of the week, while the commandment of God requires the observance of the seventh day. But it was designed by Constantine to help on the work of conciliation between heathenism and Christianity, and this purpose it served admirably. Sunday had for ages been the outward token of the worship of the sun, from which it received its name. It was coming into favor as a rest day, a feast day with the church, and by this stroke of expediency, both tendencies were strengthened, and the two systems united in exalting with civil and religious honors this day, which was destined to overshadow the ancient Sabbath of Jehovah. Since that time, there have been Sunday laws promulgated, but no Sabbath laws, and these have been of every degree of stringency. This first one, by Constantine, was slack in its requirements, but it formed the groundwork, and public sentiment soon called for and obtained such a reinforcement of the demands of Sunday as, while it placed obloquy and contumely upon the Sabbath and its observance, brought the people to a stricter regard for the Sunday under the force of penalties. The enactments that have since then found their way to the statute books of different countries are not, of course, different in principle from their famous predecessor of AD 321. The friends and advocates of these laws defend them from two standpoints, as religious measures and as civil regulations. To those who object to religious legislation, they are represented as purely civil in their nature, enacted for the temporal good of mankind, while to those who have no scruples upon the subject, they are shown to be wholly in the interest of religion. Let us look at these Sunday laws both as civil and religious enactments and see how they will bear scrutiny. If they are purely in behalf of the secular interest of mankind, then the query at once presents itself: why are the churches only so zealous in procuring them? We have never heard of an infidel working for such laws. But the claim that Sunday laws have any other than a religious signification has no foundation. It may be for the benefit of man to have these days of rest, so it is that he should have stated hours for rest, but a man may pursue his labor at any hour he chooses. The law may regulate the number of hours that shall constitute a day's labor and entitle the laborer to his reward, but it does not undertake to locate those hours. But it may be seriously questioned if such laws would not be regarded as needlessly oppressive, especially if they undertook to designate the day upon which all men should do their resting. It should rather be left with each one to decide whether he will rest or not, and whether he needs rest or not. It is certainly good for some men to take rest. It would be better for some men not to take so much of it. It would be better for some not to use certain kinds of food, and for all not to use tobacco. Laws upon these points, regulating what men should or should not eat, might be in many cases promotive of good, but they would be condemned as unnecessarily interfering with individual freedom. So with the laws whose only object was to cause men to rest for their physical good or for the good of the state upon a stated day in each week. They would certainly be regarded as oppressive if they were merely civil regulations. So that if they have any acceptable defense, it must be found in the religious significance attached to their action. If it be but a civil institution that these laws are designed to establish, then it is clear that it is set up in counter-distinction to the religious Sabbath enjoined by the Bible, the seventh day. In that case, we have another instance in which the civil law undertakes to contravene the law of God. We have, moreover, a portion of the Christian Church assiduously contending for the establishment by law of a civil rest day distinct from the Bible Sabbath, which they entirely ignore. But if Sunday laws be religious laws, and in fact they are no other, then we have religion by law, with all the evils that follow in its train. It is an attempt to force men's consciences by the arm of the law, to compel them to render obedience to religious behests, even though they have no heart in it. There is, in such a movement, all the elements of persecution, religious zeal misdirected, which we have called bigotry, united to the power of civil law for the purpose of imposing penalties upon nonconformists. There is also present in this case, as in all others of religious oppression, the lack of divine authority for the position taken, and an exhibition of weakness which renders the cause itself impotent to move men's hearts, and hence the reliance upon the arm of Caesar. It is quite possible that to some minds there will be an apparent inconsistency in the position here taken in drawing conclusions upon the civil or religious aspects of this question. But the appearance of inconsistency arises from the complex and anomalous situation in which we find the Sunday cause. Sunday observance as an institution is purely and wholly a creature of human invention. It bears an analogy to the Sabbath in the fact that it is weekly in its recurrence. But if it had been of monthly or annual recurrence, its actual relation to the Sabbath would have been no more remote than it now is. It does not rest upon the divine precept or example. It has neither blessing nor sanctification. Consequently, it is not sacred or holy. It is not a memorial of rest or of creative power, and has no spiritual significance attached to it, except that which men can impart. As a memorial in the Christian ritual, it is neither significant nor pertinent to anything. Christ did not rise one day in seven, and he never alluded to the fact that he rose upon the first day, much less that there was anything in that fact suggestive of the abrogation of the Sabbath of his resurrection. He left, through example and precept, memorials of his crucifixion, burial, and resurrection in the ordinances of the Lord's house, but no intimation of Sunday keeping. These facts are referred to, not for controversy upon the Sabbath question, but to show that Sunday observance was established by human, not by sacred authority, and that in its original position as the venerable day of the sun, by which title Constantine refers to it in his edict, or in the position in which it was placed by emperor, councils, and popes, there has not been imparted to the day any element which Christians are bound by the moral law to recognize. The laws by which it is sought to enforce its observance are purely and wholly religious. These have for their sole basis the idea of bringing people into harmony with their duty to God, as some men apprehend duty. The specious claim put forth upon certain occasions, when policy requires it, that the design of Sunday laws is to secure liberty and health for the laboring classes does not touch the real animus of the movement. Its ultimate and sole object in the minds of its originators was to promote the influence and interests of the church by constraining men to attend to her ordinances. Whether the primary object of the present advocates be the extension and upbuilding of the church or the individual good of their fellow men need not be discussed. It is not for us to judge in that matter. Doubtless, very many work purely from the higher motive. But we have in the situation the anomalous circumstance of a professed Christian people seeking to enforce religious laws, emanating not from the Lord of the Sabbath, the head of the church, but from earthly powers. Certainly there is complexity here. It is not a sufficient excuse in this day of enlightenment that we are taking up the work begun in the past. We live when men ought to have better conceptions of truth and of true liberty. But the strongest and most valid objections to Sunday laws are not drawn from the unscriptural character of Sunday as a successor of the Sabbath. They do not rest upon the fact that the Bible does not enjoin Sunday rest. Indeed, this objection had no place in this present argument, except as showing the contradictory situation in which the question is placed by its advocates, who call for civil legislation of a religious character to enforce the claims of a purely human institution under the name and character of a genuine divine institution, which they ignore and often repudiate. Allowing that the Sunday was the divinely appointed day of rest, set forth in the most explicit manner by the Lord Himself, still it would be altogether impious and impolitic from a Christian standpoint to ordain laws to compel men to observe the day. It would, in that case, be a matter pertaining exclusively to the individual and to God, and with which the state by right has nothing to do. Upon this point, all the considerations heretofore presented bear with peculiar force. It is the work of the church to persuade, by moral influence, by teaching and example, all men to do right. In this work, the Christians have the Word and Spirit of God to assist them. But the moment the state undertakes this work, it distinctly becomes Antichrist. Forcing men to remain indoors, to refrain from labor, or to attend church on Sunday will not make Christians of them. It is possible it might make hypocrites of many, but Christians of none. No one can keep the Sabbath in a manner pleasing to God or profitable to himself who does so by any other constraint than a sense of the love and the goodness of God. The Sabbath must be presented and accepted in this manner. Received in this way, it does not become a burden, an incubus, but a blessing, as it was designed to be. The claim that it is necessary to enforce the observance of a day of rest as a civil measure is without the least foundation in the real condition of affairs. Is it to prevent drunkenness or lawlessness? These ought to be controlled and restrained upon every day. Is it to be enforced because special efforts should be made to keep order upon Sunday, and that disorder is admissible upon other days? Incivility upon Sunday is incivility upon any day, and should be prevented. It is, perhaps, because those who wish to go to church and worship upon that day are liable to be disturbed if others are permitted to be at liberty. It is unquestionably the right of all to claim protection from the state in their lawful assemblies or in the exercise of their private devotions. But these matters may be carried too far. Does it disturb me when I start out to church and see my neighbor going in another way upon pleasure or to his business? If I choose to say yes, then should the law compel my neighbor to go to church with me in order that I may not be disturbed by the thought of his wickedness? This question brings before our minds all the horrors of the Inquisition. To answer it in the affirmative is to justify all the persecution that has ever taken place under the name of religion. Christian assemblies are held upon all days, and no one thinks of going out upon the street to stop traffic upon Monday or Wednesday because there is a prayer meeting or a conference going on inside. But if a man be quietly at work in his garden, half a mile away from the church, upon Sunday, it is a great disturbance to some of the worshippers who happen to know it. There is an itching to see that man brought to church by the policeman, if need be. Because most people choose to go to church upon that day, it is held that he has no right to choose how he shall spend the day. Their consciences must speak for him. No, no, it is a false view of the function of true religion that inspires people with such impulses. It is the idea that men should be left to do as they choose, providing they choose to do as we think they ought. Otherwise, they should be compelled to do as we think they ought. If God had designed that arbitrary force should be used to induce men to be religious, he would have provided some means to supply that force in a practical way without destroying the work itself. But he has nowhere revealed such a force, nor has he committed such work to any men or combination of men.
Sunday laws, or Sabbath laws, enacted and enforced by the civil power, are altogether wrong in their conception and oppressive in their execution, so far as they interfere with the practice of what is civil and proper upon any day of the week. The duty of observing the Sabbath is one which men owe to God, and not a duty which they owe to the state. A man can fulfill all the duties of citizenship without keeping any day, and when he has fulfilled the duties of citizenship, he has done all that the state has any right to require of him. Every man who conducts himself as a good citizen is accountable alone to God for his religious faith and should be protected in worshiping God according to the dictates of his own conscience. George Washington. Firmly relying ourselves on the truth of Christianity and acknowledging with gratitude the solace of religion, we disclaim alike the right and the desire to impose our convictions on any of our subjects. We declare it to be our royal will and pleasure that none be in any wise favored, none molested or disquieted by reason of their religious faith or observances, but that all shall alike enjoy the equal and impartial protection of the law. And we do strictly charge and enjoin all those who may be in authority under us that they abstain from all interference with the religious belief or worship of any of our subjects, on pain of our highest displeasure. And it is our further will that, so far as may be, our subjects, of whatever race or creed, be freely and impartially admitted to offices in our service, the duties of which they may be qualified by their education, ability, and integrity to discharge. Queen Victoria's Proclamation to India, 1859.